And now we have the pleasure of interviewing Fab Morvan on the other side of the line. How are you doing, man?
Radio Primavera Sound, Fab Morvan with the guys. I'm doing great, man. You know, like I said, the movie, the Millbilly movie, Girl Knows True, is about celebration. You know, the music impacted the world in many ways, you know, but energy-wise, it made people smile. It took people out of their daily lives. But what it did is it made people happy to begin with. Some people were created because of that music. Some people went home after the club and then got together and then married and had children. So now when I look at social media, I see kids that are 3, 6, 7, 14 who are dancing in front of the TV screen trying to do those songs. Because those songs are like, ooh, 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 I love you. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. You know, it's very kid-like. But there's something at the core of the music that is pure. And I think that it has traveled through time and is still affecting people in many ways.
Well,
so, celebrating.
I was going to say, that's one of the things I love about the film, because in many ways, it's a sad story.
Yes.
But the way it ends, you know, you kind of literally say, right, we're going to give you, you know, we're going to give you, and we get one more run through of Go, You Know It's True. And it's fantastic, you know, it's like... that happy moment to kind of to end it, and it left me in a really good mood.
Yeah, listen, what it does is like it's perfect when it comes to, you know, with art. It's about art imitates life, but I think there's a nice bridge that took place between the two. So even me staying at the premiere watching the movie for a second time with an audience, I could feel that people were gasping and even crying or holding their breath at the same time. So when I look at that, I'm like, you know, yes, my story. When I look at my story, I'm like, damn, nobody could have written that. That's just an insane story. Oh, that's my story. Okay. You know, but it's a story that had to be told because there's also hope in the story. We couldn't linger too long. It's a movie, you know, so we had to cover and touch base on the multi-level and layers of the story. But it's done in a tasteful way. It's done with love and with passion. And in the end, it shows, because it shows. Now you tell me, at the end, you feel happy. You feel like the positive vibe. And it's a very special piece of art, I must say, because I'm a moviegoer, watcher. And this one is special. Yes, it is my story, but it's the way it connects with the audience at times. This wink, wink to the audience. You're watching the movie, it's only like, the character addresses you. It's like, well, okay. Even I was like, my wife was like, it looks like you. Right there. I was like, yeah. I was weaving in and out of like reality, storytelling, art imitates life, just really incredible. So I'm happy that I am a co-producer on this, and I'm not just blabbering my mouth because, you know, I'm part of it. It's also because it's finally taking people down the gauntlet that we went through. And you cannot help feel the pain of each actors. They did a wonderful job, huh? T-John and Elon, like, man, they lived together. They really went down the hole, so to speak, and really brought those characters to life. So kudos to them. Kudos to the director. Kudos to Matthias Feinhofer, to Bella, who's playing Ingrid, because you really get to see the characters and the dynamics, whether it's exploitation, whether it's manipulation, and the happiness of the music is clear, and the fanaticism of the girls, the ladies, especially, you know, and the music and the vibe and the no shirt and the skin action, the dancing, everything is in there. It's nicely bottled up, and we're going to shake that tonight, and we're going to let it go out, splash everybody. And they're going to feel what you felt when you watched it.
So how obviously it's a film, it's not a documentary.
No.
And how true is it to what actually happened? Because I'm thinking of one moment. There's one moment where in the film you sing for Frank Farian, and there's some debate about whether it actually happened. And actually the characters in the film say, this didn't happen. And then so how true to life is it?
Well, you know, that's where Simon Geniuses comes up. Because what was happening with this scene is like, it's our wish as Robin Fab to live the dream, and it's Frank Farian manipulating us to do what he needs to do with Ingrid. You know, so that's why you have to watch this movie multiple times to finally like, oh, that's how it's written. That's how it comes across. So sometimes as the movie moves, you don't have time to grasp that moment. But the level at which it's written, it's on a high level. You know, so you have to watch it, I think, a couple times to really grab a hold of it, because there's a lot of sarcasm that is really true, because it's like, hey, dude, Frank, that's what you did. And obviously, Frank has been impressed that he didn't really like, he was not happy about how it turned out, because, you know, when you get old, you kind of forget what you did. But what you did essentially is you focused on living your dream, and you did it with passion, and you gave, when you made that music, it was with love and passion, truly. But in the equation of creativity, you were using multiple human beings that you didn't necessarily respect and didn't give a chance to. Because nowadays, yes, we have out of tune. If we have had out of tune back then, maybe Frank would have said like, yo, you want to use that? Yeah, let's get the first single, and then on the second single, we're going to do the work and we're going to get better. You know, when management comes in and record company, that's how artists have built. You know, we bring coaches in and songwriters and producers, and together as a team, we create this project. And then hopefully on the next album, the artist says, hey, I want to write songs. I'm producing. Here's my demos. I'm going to give it to the producer. And that is the process that takes place. But we were robbed out of that just because Frank Farian's goal was to create it all himself. And when he did Milli Vanilli, it was Boney M 2.0 equal Milli Vanilli, you know. And he told everyone, no, this thing on the record. So he manipulated everybody. He had the money to pay those artists. And let's not forget, in this equation, the people who sang the record were also approached the same way we were approached. Hey, listen. You're recording this, but you only, you know, I'll tell you later, and never told them until it was the last minute, and say, when you found us, because when you look at the timeline, it's like, okay, music made, and we go look for Robin Fab. We bring Robin Fab. They sign a contract. The majority of the contract is on the side of the table. You give me one page to sign. I have no attorney, no management. It's in German. Ah, bon? Really? Yeah. Okay. Rob, is that cool? That one is cool. Where's the money? It's there. Okay, cool. All right. By the way, the album is for 3 albums. Well, you find that out later. So when it's time to sing on a record, they're like, yo, we don't want to do that. And they're like, well, money is not for free. So what are we going to do? Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Well, we do this one single, then we out. The single becomes a success. We become seduced by this life. We're young boys.
Yeah.
You know, we had a problem with the girls. Never. Yeah. But when that came around, bro.
I mean, you guys, yeah. And still, your genetics, man. You are so handsome. You know, black don't crack.
My mother.
And both, I mean, and obviously, Fab, may you rest in peace. I mean,
Rob,
may you rest in peace. I mean, even I remember being a kid, and you know, being like the only black kid in school and everything.
I feel you.
I'd look up like, man, this is my, these are brothers, you know, these are the, it was like this ideal, all the girls that were like, it's like, I'm going to grow up to look like that someday, you know, I was like, I had my hopes, my dad didn't let me have dreadlocks, but it's like, well, as soon as I get my chance, I'm going to grow my hair, I'm going to get those spandex on, and I'm going to hit the club and bring in some of this Milli Vanilli love that was going around, because
you know, when you say that, you know, Michael Jackson was that for me.
Yeah.
Him around, it was like, yo, and everybody was like, oh, you look like Michael, really cool, let's take advantage of that. Yeah. So I hear that a lot, that we were like those two exotic looking dudes who helped all the brothers that were in school, that were the only black kids in the school, to become cool, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's for us to bring people together. That's what happened, and that's one of the reasons why I'm still in music, is to bring people together. When I go to a U2 show, it's incredible how you feel human. When they sing those songs, you see people from all parts of the globe, but you feel human. There's not, you're black, I'm white, I'm Spanish, I'm Asian. It's just human. And that's what music did with Milli Vanilli. In America, when I got to America at first, I kid you not, we were told, listen, you guys can hang with white women like this in a club. Like, what? What do you mean? Well, you know, it's different here. Like, oh, really? Well, in Europe, I don't know. This is what we know. You know, we didn't get it. And then in Jet Magazine, we were called like, oh, they love white women. So it was a very confusing time. Or even being in the South performing and have this girl in my room say, if my dad knew you were here, he'd kill you and me. He's like, what? And then, like, you know, even girls saying, oh, my dad, when he sees me watching you on MTV, is like, burn this shit off. It's like, what? Wow. There was racism on board. And in the process of going through life, I started to see all the layers of my story and how we affected society by having, you know, you had Michael Jackson on MTV, then you have this pop, because when you're black in America, you go to black entertainment television. You don't go to crossover right away like we did. Yeah. It was really rare. Later on, you know, the Ushers and everybody in the Aaliyah came after, one of the forerunners for that. And it was changing the landscape of music and also of cultural landscape by having those exotic dudes looking fine as hell and like, you know, and daddy be like, what are you doing? No, we're not doing that here. We're in America. You know, you United States of America. And there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
So, of course, in the movie, you can really, you cover all, you travel through those points as much as you could. You know, but I think by having a conversation, it's good to have this conversation because, you know, and still things are not fantastic, but at least there's more dialogue. Yeah. And story is a piece of conversation, but it's a piece of elevation because it shows that after everything, when you watch the movie and when people hear about the movie and they see interviews like this one right now, and they listen, then they start to have a different perspective on the story and Fab, Rob, like, yo, they were exploited. And I'm not playing the victim, far from. I take full responsibility for what we did, and Rob and I did that back in the days. But you see how hardcore it was that they threw us to the wolves because Rob died his lost his life as a result of the joke and they threw us in the street, dragged us, threw the stone at us. Even the journalists at the press conference, the racist comments, because it's because they didn't even realize what they were saying. They were so, racism was so entrenched in their way of life that they didn't even, that's why I would love to talk to the journalists that were present at the press conference and have them say, do you realize what you just said? I'm black. And you tell them, that's how ignorant they were. And, you know, ignorance is a byproduct of racism.
Well, this is one thing that really struck me about the film, because, you know, I remember when everything happened with Milli Vanilli. I remember, you know, having to give the Grammy back and everything like that. And I remember it being big news, but I was really shocked to see, you know, people like, you know, getting the steamroller out with the albums, people like, you know, asking for their money back. And you mentioned autotune. Like, if exactly the same thing happened today, do you think there would be the same response?
Listen, today, those influencers, we call them, some of them become famous for, I don't know, they've understood the business of show business. They get marketing companies to come in, they have enough followers, so they have the finance to pay for marketing. They go find brands, they can monetize. Anything like that would have happened today, I can tell you, I would be a rich man, one of the richest influencers. But when you look at the pie, the financial pie, the responsibility pie, we took the whole responsibility pie in our faces. Bang! And all the finance they took, they made $250 million in 2 years in America. We sold 33 singles, 33 million records, 33 million singles, 14 to 15 to 16 million albums through the years, year after year, best of, with my face on it. I don't get anything on it. Wow.
Yeah.
But you know, it's okay. I've done my work. I forgive everybody. I developed my emotional intelligence. I developed as an artist. As a result of developing music, songwriting, production became a therapeutic process. So my music, emotionally and vibration wise, frequency wise, is on a different level. When you hear me sing, I'm going to get right into the core of your soul. And I'll be there and I'll stay there for a long time.
By the way, when you put on your shows as Fab Morvan, do you sing Milli Vanilli songs in the show?
Yeah. Of course, man.
Because those are great songs. I mean,
I kill them. You know, I do tape shows, 30 minutes. I just do Milli songs. I do a couple covers through there. We tape. I have a full band as well with which I work. When I do the full band, I bring in some. I did an album called Love Revolution. I bring some of the songs in there. I add some Prince covers. Oh yeah, I Could Never Take the Place of Your Man. What, Bob Marley, Redemption Song? What, man? I kill him. 75 minutes on stage, and then it's cool because I'm able to talk to the audience, and it's important to talk to the audience so I can grab their emotional attention. So when you leave the show, whatever perspective that you had about Fab Morvan is like, oh, wow, I flipped the script on you big time. That's what I'm going to do. And more people are going to be aware of me. And, you know, I'm like that car that you want to buy. I'm going to be everywhere.
Well, you see, this is one very interesting thing, because I don't know how people feel about Milli Vanilli these days, but this film really made me think about it all again. It really made me think...
Great.
God, they had it harsh. I mean, do you think this is going to happen a lot? Do you think it's going to mark like a real sea change in how people see what you did?
Big time. Big time. I see that every day in the way people, you know, because like I said, I mentioned the documentary because it's funny, in America, a lot of people watch the industry is in love with the doc. Slowly but surely that the movie is coming out, they're like, wow, because now they get the visual. And some people forgot how huge we were. Let's not forget, we did that without social media.
Yeah.
Why, bro? So when people get to know that, oh, he's still here doing his thing. Oh, by the way, you can go to YouTube and see him perform. They look at him. Well, he doesn't look that different after all. Same. Okay, so once you have it, you always have it. So the proof is in the pudding. And when I'm coming with my production and what's coming, man, like I said, once I enter your consciousness, you're going to be dreaming about me. You're going to be singing my song in your shower as you, in the morning, get ready. You're going to be in your car, and I'm going to stay in your mind. And when I'm gone later on my tombstone, it'll be like, you know, what doesn't kill you make you stronger. Nietzsche, yeah. Believe in who you are. That's it.
Did you receive messages of support back then when you held the press conference and in between? Have you received support from the artistic community, people saying, I know what you've been going through, the backlash, and I just want to let you know that I hear for you?
Those would always come after, you know, but back then there was no internet. So I remember when my management stopped representing us, they were like, hey, every week, can you come get these boxes of letters? And it's starting to block. We're going to have to put them in the trash. I was like, I don't have the space. I don't live in the house I used to live at. So I'm sorry, but, you know, just throw them away. I couldn't keep on to that. And it was hurting me anyway, because I thought that fans were complaining because the narrative that you spoke about, Roll Simming the Records, that was a narrative. The fans never left our side. And when I look at the comments like, hey, I've been by you since 1989. I'm like, whoa. But it's constant. And now that social media is there and there's a reach, oh, Fab Morvan, let me go on YouTube. Oh, Instagram. Oh, Facebook. Oh, cool. By the way, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. I'm out there, ladies and gentlemen. I'm out here. Go. So come meet me. You know, I try to do my best and respond to everybody. But for now, one of the first installments that's gonna really affect this narrative is the movie, because the movie is, it takes you, it's like stepping into a time machine, and the colors, the music, those boys did the job, and you really get to feel what it was like back then. And that's the cool thing. And it's a positive, you know, it's a sad story, like you said.
Yeah.
But also, you know, music history.
Talking about feelings, there are not many people who get to number one in the United States. How does that feel?
Well, it's like, you know, I would define it as the story going through this was like a dream slash nightmare. Yeah. So me, every number one was like dream slash nightmare, because I was like, oh damn, I'm not singing on that track. So it hurt. For me, it hurt, you know, and I say, I vowed to myself that I will never stop until, I don't care about the number one. I don't believe in that, but I just want to move people the way I move people with those songs, with my songs. If I can't do that, then I'll come full circle, you know. But I think that when I play my music to even professionals, they do double take. They're like, wow, because I am a musical chameleon. I just don't do one thing. I merge dance and rock. I merge Afro and dance, reggaeton and Afro. I mix everything because I don't see no boundaries, and I don't see why there should be a ceiling to creativity. Me not being a top musician allows me to break the rules, because there are no rules. And when it comes to vocal timbre, I can go all the way down to the down, and I can go to all the way up to the top. You know, I'll always be beautiful. You know, you can change your voice and you can go all the way down. So that's what I'm going to take him through, my creativity. And for me, it's my sword. I'm like a creative samurai, and I'm chiseling my career and my musical journey.
Well, I mean, how do you feel when you see people like Kanye West or Daft Punk, even who are at the top of everyone's entertainment list, and they are self-recognized? As Kanye says, he's not a singer. He always admits that he doesn't know how to sing, and but he figured that out, right? He figured out how to make his voice work. Or Daft Punk, they're not serious musicians, but they can go into a studio with the world's best musicians and make Random Access Memories, no? How do you feel when you see examples of those, of people who've navigated the, you know?
Listen, I love it. Why do I love it? It's because there is such a thing as a voice. And when you have a voice and know how to use it, you can use it just like a guitar with different strings. So Daft Punk makes the music, and you can see that when they did, they used The Weeknd on their song. You see how that song went? You can't do without the voice. Kanye is not a singer, but he's able to translate his emotions through the voice, and he has the tools in the studio to make it happen. So I celebrate creativity. But when it comes to a voice and your words and everything you are, and when everything becomes an extension of who you are, you start to venture into a different creative landscape and have your spot. There is a spot for everyone out there. And I think that there is a spot for me as a creative. And when the world is going to be exposed to what I am as an artist, it's going to be fun, because there is no limitation to creativity. That is my, so whatever I think, I do it. There's no rules. And I see that with Kanye, you see that with Daft Punk, around the world 30 times, but it worked. The looping worked. So I used to work, you know, I'm a DJ, and I played tech house, deep house. I work with tech producers, and I have different projects that I work on anonymously and change my name. You know, at the beginning, when I entered the world of dance music, I would write a full song and it would come back with a phrase and said, this is what we're going to do. I'm like, what? But I did a whole song. I'm like, no, man, just check it out. And I would listen and be like, oh, wow, there's different ways to create something. And going into the dance music realm has taught me to stop me many things, that there is no limitation to what you can do. So that's why I love dance music, because they break the rules all the time. Pop music reacts to rules that have been broken in different types of music. Mm. And then they commercialize it. So my thing is to, whatever this process is, I'm going to bring it. And because I've been in dance music for a long time, I've learned a lot from that. And I'm merging styles together that you don't necessarily hear together. But because my voice is at the core of those tracks, there's this, oh yeah, that's him. Oh, that's a different him. So I can't wait to hop on that horse and ride into the sunset. Hee-haw! And have fun with it. You know, that's it. Have fun with it. It's just what it's about. It's entertainment, you know? And some things are going to work, some things are not going to work, but some things are going to work. And the one things are going to work are going to confirm to me, okay, they dig that, I'm digging that, let's have fun with that.
Fab, I'm sure you're going to have to go, but I wanted to ask you before we do, what was like your most happy moment in Milli Vanilli?
One of my happiest moments, I have several, right? But one of my happiest was I remember playing for 65,000 people. And we took off from somewhere. It was in Canada. We took an helicopter. It was a small one. And then there was no doors. I was like, yo. You know, you're like, well, okay, but you had a safety belt on. And then we went around the crowd and then landed in a back. And then we got out of the helicopter and then we ran to that stage. That feeling when hitting 65,000 people and hearing that electric war, bro, you become a superhero. But you stand for whatever they felt that day, the people that were there present, they will never forget it. I never forgot it. And I was on stage. So if you can become a conduit for positive energy and create this electric, invisible wave, because it's all about energies, vibration, and frequencies. It's all about that. So if you can tap on that, in the words of the frequency modulator, FM Fab Morvan, yo, it's a dream. I'm living the dream. So it took me some time to get back to the stage and feeling that energy. But I'm at a level where I can tap into that, and I'm getting better and better and better. I might not look as good as I used to, you know, but I sure know how to do my thing on the stage and reach you and have you like, how old is this dude? Yeah, like, man, those songs are his songs now. There's no denying he does what he does. So that's what everyone is going to start to be faced with and realize. And then after that, man, we're just going to have some fun. I write, I produce, but also I paint. You know, I write stories, and I can't wait to visit those part of my creativity, because creativity is at the core of everything. With creativity as a currency, you can't work anywhere, you know? So let's go, man. Let's go have fun.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, sorry.
No, go on.
Obviously, I imagine you were able, it helped to go through the dark side of the story at the time when the whole scandal came out. It helps that you weren't alone. You had Rob in this with you. How important was it to have someone like Carmen Pilates, Rob's sister, as a consultant on the movie?
It was very important because she was one of the closest, you know, she's my sister, been my sister for a long time. And, you know, the situation at dinner, I was at some of those situations where the father was, he was a physicist, you know, long beard, he looked like Karl Marx. And he was really like conservative and didn't allow for disrespect. It was not disrespect, it just, you wanted to voice your opinion, you know, but he didn't allow for that. He was the man, old school, you know, his adopted mother, you know, she was very subservient. She couldn't speak or say nothing or take his side. He would look at her like, you know, and be like, oh, shit, one of them. Okay, all right. You know, nothing was equal. It was, I'm there. I bring in the money and the bacon. You shut the hell up. I'm going to say, and he has to listen. But Rob was a strong character. So it was like, okay, I don't care. I'll sleep outside in the garden tonight. And I came to some of the stuff that took place in that household. Man, that father was hardcore. And that's the reason Rob also became very, very strong and stubborn as well. True story. One time we came, I'll give it to you. On the Christmas day, we came to the house and we came like 2 minutes after the time that we were supposed to be. You open the door, it's like, too late. Close the door. It was like, what? So the train was over. We can, you know, some train, the connection were not happening. So we had to walk home. And it was far. That's the kind of things that Rob had to deal with. And the fact that Rob was an adopted kid, biracial, so in school, it was not a walk in the park with the jokes. You know, when you were the only black kids at the time, it was rough. And kids can be cruel. They don't know any better. You know, you look like charcoal. Like, you know, like, what do you mean? And you're black. What does it mean you're black? You know, I remember that girl, like I said earlier, said to me, oh, if my dad was here, he would have killed you and not. But why? You're black. Like, just because I'm black. So that's why when I talk about you two making you feel human when you go to their show, as a musician, I think one of my duty is to make sure that whatever I create will be part of the solution in our society as human being. Music is a wonderful, magical tool that knows no walls. It can seep in people's mind and possibly erase ignorance, you know, a byproduct of racism. And let's see what I can do. You know, maybe at the end, people will recognize me as an icon of real, as opposed to be recognized as an icon of fake, some people's eyes, you know, which is funny.
Well, it's been fantastic to speak to you today.
Very nice. I like the question, you know, it's
good.
It's questions, man. I like to venture there because it's, you know, the story has allowed me to live an incredible life and to understand more about life and gave me insight. So when I can do an interview with the right questions, it's all about asking the right questions. And it's a theater of the mind. People are listening, you know, and we take them and maybe they can learn something. It's about learning. Yeah.
Well, if you're in Barcelona, come to the studio and we'll do it in person. It would be a pleasure.
Well, you know, I do come. I love skateboarding over there. So if I'm there, when and if, I'll let you all know.
You get in touch. We'll bring
in touch. We know secret spots. Good secret spots for skating.
Hook me up.
And go and see the film, which comes out in Spain. It comes out March the 27th. I guarantee you you'll enjoy it. And I guarantee you it will change the way you feel about the story of Milli Vanilli, because that absolutely what it did to me. It's a brilliant film.
And one last thing.
Of course.
Girls, you know it's true. And you say,
oh, I love you.
Thank you, guys. It's all about love. There's no stopping him now. It takes you there. It does take you there, man. You know. That's what it is.
Yeah. I just want to let you know that whenever I hear the songs, I always think it's you guys really singing on the record. Like, I just can't separate the video clips.
It's impossible, man. And you know, like the one thing that Milli Vanilli is, it's allowed me to access that immortal swag. If I can say.
Yeah, immortal swag.
Exactly.
You're one of the chosen ones.
Thank you, man. On this, we say bye-bye, and I go. I like to do this this scent of energy. Pow! And then, you know, I go like this.
Wah!
Whoa, did you feel that? Okay, that's what I do.
Cheers, fam.
Thank you,
we'll
fam.
See you in Barcelona soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Peace.